And to that piece of lieutenant that's always on his podcast, bash us, yeah.
All right, everybody. Eric Dim, your most complained cop, NYPD. This is New York's finest retired and filtered podcast. We got a 265 Police Live Series. Of course, with me is the founder and the co-host of the podcast, John McCary, retired lieutenant. We got a good one for you here. We're talking about CCRBs and vehicle pursuits, something that we foreshadowed that's going to happen, and we're seeing it right now in a recent newsletter from the LBA president. John, let's get right into it. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, we did an episode 6 months ago, almost to the date. Like we did, it was called The Fall Guy. So the reason we titled this episode Fall Guy 2, it's in relation to that. We were talking about as John Schell took over chief of patrol, he got appointed that rank. Vehicle pursuits had increased almost 600% immediately upon him taking over. So I was pretty outspoken about it. Eric was pretty outspoken about it. And we kind of weren't on the same page with a lot of people in law enforcement. I know that vehicle pursuits are a tactic throughout the country that police use. But in New York City, because of the density, it really never was a tactic that was used. Even in the height of broken windows policing, when we were proactive, hands-on police force, there were plenty of times pursuits were called off. And the reason for that is whenever the risk to the public outweighs the crime that we're chasing, which is going to be the majority of the time, it's not worth it. So what you would hear is you'd hear a vehicle pursuit get put over, and supervisors at the time that me and Eric were cops for, I mean, our entirety of our career and even people prior, those vehicle pursuits would be called off by supervising officers. And it's actually the opposite today. Under John Schell, you're being encouraged, and you're not only being encouraged, you're being bullied to chase vehicles for minor offenses. And if you're not, you're going to have to answer to them. And we've had that from several credible sources that that's exactly what's going on.
Like John just said, we've met an extreme amount of opposition from retired law enforcement, active members, especially the CRT team, the community response team, the NYPD, who wears khaki pants, because they're at the front line of these vehicle pursuits, these car chases, because they work directly for John Schell. And what we had foreshadowed is that the Civilian Complaint Review Board would eventually take their chunk of the New York City Police Department. Ultimately, the goal is that the police officers face adverse consequence, which is civil liability. And we foreshadowed this. The LBA president just put out a letter in response to what's going on with the CCRB, that they're attacking these vehicle pursuits, and they're being defined under the category of abuse of authority. Now, abuse of authority is very vague. The Civilian Complaint Review Board, they investigate force, excessive force, unnecessary force, abuse of authority, discourtesy, offensive language, and now there's a new caveat, untruthful statements to the CCRB. So when it comes to abuse of authority, as far as vehicle pursuits, this is quite interesting to me, because is someone going to flee from the police and then call the CCRB and say, hey, I want to make a complaint that the police department chased me because I committed so many infractions or I just killed someone? No, these are going to be self-initiated cases, exactly what John and I had foreshadowed. CCRB has the power to self-initiate cases without an actual complainant. And the CCRB, as overzealous as they are, will take that step and they will retrieve data. They will pick a precinct. They will pick a location, find vehicle pursuits, and they will investigate them to substantiate complaints. What I also see going forward is that they will exceed the statute of limitations on these cases, because then they could just charge reckless endangerment. And even if the case cannot be substantiated in an administrative trial room, the cop will still face civil liability because those cases are substantiated. That's a major problem I see with this going forward.
I mean, I wonder why it took so long to wave the flag, not only on vehicles pursuits, but on the fact that regardless of anything, whether it's like, you know, the LBA letter here, is it's focused around vehicular pursuits. And they're saying if you're being found guilty of an abuse of authority in regard to a vehicular pursuit, you will not be represented by the New York City Law Department, nor will you be indemnified. So you will be held personally liable for anything that should arise for you doing your job as a New York City police officer, for you doing what you're told to do by New York NYPD's Chief of Patrol, John Schell. So, but they're waving the flag on this about vehicle pursuits. But Eric, we've known about this for a long time. Me and you have been speaking about this over and over again, that if you have a substantiated CCRB for anything and a lawsuit arises, you will not be indemnified. I think the vehicular pursuits are the most egregious form of what you need to worry about, because God forbid you jump a curb. God forbid there are innocent cars involved. I mean, the liability on a police officer to pursue a car in New York City, it was never worth it. Even when we had mayors that supported us, even when there was a city council that supported us, even when both Democrats and Republicans supported us, that would never be a tactic. It's not, and especially in a time now where we see that the majority of these DAs, I watched the city council hearing today, and I'm going to clip out a bunch of that. You're going to hear the DAs, even the Staten Island DA, you're going to hear them talk about how they're more concerned with programs instead of punitive punishment and prosecution. It's disturbing. So this is definitely not something I think that anyone with a clear head should partake in.
It's interesting that you said they raised the flag on it now. So I have my suspicions of why I think that happened. So this is a phenomenon that's been going on for quite some time, these vehicle pursuits. But you and I definitely spoke about this even before 6 months ago, before we actually put out this podcast. But at the height of it, we put out the podcast to really highlight how bad it's getting. And we completely foreshadowed it. But my suspicion is this. Now that Nick Stephanopoulos, lieutenant in khaki pants, was involved in a very controversial incident of a vehicle pursuit, he is going to face civil liability. That will be a substantiated civilian complaint. And ultimately, Lou Turco, as the president of the LBA, does not want to actually, he doesn't want to have to use LBA funds, union funds, to assist lieutenants going forward. So that's why I think that he raised the flag at this time, because I think there's a monetary value to this. And I think that's ultimately, that is my suspicion.
I mean, I wouldn't disagree with you. I do think Lou will go above and beyond for this one particular lieutenant, because it's in his best interest to stay aligned with the upper echelon of the NYPD. So I do think you will see some more nepotism, you know, not like how I know they helped you out somewhat, Eric, but I don't believe their advice was so great for you, your career, and I don't believe they pushed back at the CCRB the way they should have. They did represent you when you needed them, but I don't believe they represented you properly. As for myself, they pretended that the mandate really wasn't a job issue. It was a personal issue, which is ridiculous. So I wouldn't argue with you in your suspicions. I mean, I would think that you're 100% correct. And basically, the letter that we have up on the screen, it's dated March 19th. Dear Lieutenant, has recently come to our attention that the Career Criminal Revenge Board is now investigating members of the service under the guise of abuse of authority regarding vehicle pursuits. Such an allegation or finding by the CCRB will make you liable for civil lawsuits stemming from a vehicle pursuit. If you are found guilty of an allegation of abuse of authority emanating from a vehicle pursuit, the city will not indemnify you, and the city's law department will not represent you in any civil suit attached to this vehicle pursuit. It goes on and on, but this is the gist of it. I mean, very scary times.
So the other thing that I see is extremely problematic for a police officer involved in a vehicle pursuit. Now, we both have been expressive to say that we are complete opposition of vehicle pursuits as a tactic. However, there are extreme cases where it's necessary. And I say extreme cases. Someone is kidnapped at gunpoint and it's happening in real time. Extreme cases. But here's the problem that I see. If the Civilian Complaint Review Board is going to open up a case, self-initiate a case based on a vehicle pursuit, we could potentially have various amounts. We could have 20 complainants on one case, because the occupants of the car there would be complaints or victims for that CCRB. Maybe pedestrians that were nearby, other vehicles that were occupied that were nearby. All these people that are in the vicinity of this pursuit, and a pursuit can go on for miles, it could go on for blocks. Anyone in the vicinity of that pursuit is a potential victim for CCRB. So we could have hundreds of complainants on a CCRB. And would that be 100 complaints? This is extremely problematic. And I think that's the ultimate goal. And then eventually from there, they can then weaponize the disciplinary matrix and have someone terminated. I see this as a major problem. And I think ultimately the major problem is facing civil liability, because these cops, they will be left holding the bag and they're going to be abandoned, just as it says in the letter. We've said this a long time ago. They will be abandoned. John Schell is not going to step up and say this is a vehicle tactic that I have pushed and I think it's necessary at this time. You won't hear a word. Crickets.
Absolutely. And I think when you look at recruitment, you're going to see more and more people leave the New York City Police Department, and you're going to see less people apt to take this job when they understand that if you are found guilty of a civilian complaint review board investigation, which oftentimes you will be, because it's an agency that's looking to grow. It's an agency that to look to prove the reason for their existence, that they to pretend that they're keeping you safe from New York City police officers, while ignoring the rising crime in New York City. What you're going to see is an even more depleted police department. You know, again, at the city council hearing, Chief John Benoit spoke, and I can't wait to clip that out. I'll go back. The meeting's still going on right now, so I can't go on. But he spoke on how great retention is in the NYPD, on how the attrition rate's actually higher than it's ever been. It's actually higher than what their normal attrition rate is. And he attributed it to the contract. He attributed it all to the contract, and there was even 164 members that were looking to be reinstated to the New York City Police Department. But what he didn't tell you is most people waited for that contract before they left because they wanted to get their retro check and they wanted to get their money and they wanted to know what it was like, and then they were leaving. And what he also didn't tell you is that all the contracts that were settled with all the unions, of those 164 members that are seeking reinstatement, how many of them are in high ranks? Many of them. You know why? Because they're coming back for a year to pad their pensions, and they already made deals with their friends on where they're going to go, and these are not going to be effective New York City police officers to go in there and fight crime. That's what he's not telling you. So they play games with the numbers. This is concerning. I mean, listen to the second part of the Lieutenant Benevolent Association email. You must be cognizant of the fact that your employer, the City of New York, will abandon you if you are guilty by CCRB, which is another entity created by the city to monitor you of abuse of authority related to a vehicle pursuit. You must be conscious of the fact that you may open yourself up to personal civil liability, jeopardizing your personal or family's financial well-being, and or sacrificing time with your family by surrendering vacation days if found guilty of abuse of authority connected to a vehicle pursuit.
Well, the bottom line is Lou Turco can't just completely be 100% transparent. I'm quite impressed, actually, by this letter that he actually admitted that the upper echelon of the police department would abandon you, especially with what we see, what's going on in the police department now as far as nepotism. So I'm quite impressed. But what this actually says is that 100% you will be found guilty. And again, what this also, I think, also opens the door for is if a cop is involved in a vehicle pursuit, and if a car flees and the car is not actually apprehended, I believe that it opens up the gate for also a racial profiling complaint initiated by the CCRB, because how would we actually be able to disprove or prove it? And the CCRB, as we know, is completely overzealous, and they will find a way to substantiate the complaint. So that's what I see another problem, is open the door for racial profiling complaints in connection with these vehicle pursuits.
Yeah, and on the last episode that we did about vehicle pursuits, we actually talked about the dichotomy between the message that John Schell was putting out, we're not having it anymore. Same message that Kaz Daughtry is putting out, we're not having it anymore. But then the message that was being put out by Chief Jeffrey Madry, when he's like, oh, refamiliarize yourself with the patrol guide, right? And then again, the LBA now puts the same thing out. Same thing that I was saying is like, hey, if you believe this is a good tactic, why aren't you rewriting the patrol guide? Because as per the patrol guide, 99% of these vehicle pursuits are telling you you can't do it. When for a ghost car or whatever they want to call it, fake plate, unregistered vehicle, any type of minor crime, you should not pursue. So Lou Turco goes on to write, you must refamiliarize yourself with patrol guide procedure, vehicle pursuits, procedure number 22115. This procedure states that the primary vehicle must determine the necessity for commencing and continuing a vehicle pursuit by considering, amongst other things, the nature of the offense, initiating the nature of the offense that initiates the pursuit, the location and population density where the pursuit is taking place. Also be aware that your responsibilities as the supervisor is to terminate the pursuit if necessary. In addition, you must be cognizant that for many offenses, paper plates, stolen plates, GLA, etc., the perpetrators will most likely not be indicted or prosecuted.
Well, that's correct. I mean, if you just reading this alone as a cop, if you're aware of this, if you actually read this, this should deter you enough from being involved in any vehicle pursuits. Again, I said it's extreme cases, but just by you reading this letter alone, just shows how subjective a vehicle pursuit is. It's extremely subjective, and that's what CCRB is. CCRB has the right and authority to be subjective in their opinion. I mean, Arva Rice said it herself at a city council hearing where she said, they don't take into the totality of circumstances and what happened with the police officer and both sides of the coin. They just take into account, they represent the actual complainant. And now this goes even further because we're not going to actually have a complainant in most cases on this. It's going to be self-initiated by the CCRB. We already know the CCRB has a complete disdain for the police department, especially the boots on the ground. How do we know? John and I testify pretty much on a monthly basis. We've taken a couple of months off now. It's been, but for the most part, We've attended numerous meetings held by the CCRB, and we've heard the rhetoric that goes on at CCRB along with the attendees who speak out at CCRB. It's complete one-sided. And I can tell you right now, the message out there to the cops, it should be do not do it unless you have extreme cases. I'm talking, you know, one in a million case because it's extremely subjective, and this it's going to be subjective against you. You're going to face the civil liability. We talk about prosecution, of course. But ultimately, you're going to be paying out of your own pocket for doing your job as you were told to do because John Shell, the chief of patrol, has not yet taken accountability and actually come out and spoke and said, listen, I was trying. This is what I would expect from a leader. I was trying to do my best. We're in dire straits right now. I'm wrong. We need to change tactics. I need to save my police officer's careers. But he's not saying that. He's not saying that. So, again, that's why I have a huge problem with the weak appointed management. They do not take accountability and responsibility in this NYPD, as we see. The cops are on their own. Do not let this be you. CCRB will eat you up, and they will dive right into your pocket.
Absolutely. And again, this is another reason why they picked young, impressionable people, put in khaki pants, told them to chase cars, is because they don't know any better. They don't have the know-it-all to do it. I mean, the supervisors that they put in place are weak. They're, you know, they're compliant, they're weak, and they're spineless, and they'll do whatever they're told to do, knowing the severe penalties that you will face, and probably some of you are already facing. And if you don't even know it, there's probably other ones that are going to get notified soon of other things that are going to happen because these vehicle pursuits are no good. They almost end up in crashes almost all of the time. And it's just not worth it because like Lou's saying here, here's a little bit moment of clarity. They are not being prosecuted. Chances are you might not even get this collar drawn up. And God forbid somebody loses their life. God forbid somebody seriously injured. What do you have to fall back on as to why you did it? A news clip from John Shell saying we're not going to have it anymore when they're reading the patrol guide out at your criminal hearing or at your civil hearing, you're done. You are going to be done because you're going to sit there as they read those words to you and be like, oh, my God, I shouldn't chase that car because it says it right here, clear as day. And my bosses put the blinders on me, and I listen to these men who all turn their back on me, will not pick up my calls any further. And hey, just a casualty, right? Another casualty.
Oh, absolutely. It's my belief that the CCRB has already commenced numerous investigations in regards to vehicle pursuits. I would suspect that they're probably just sitting on these cases right now and letting them pile up, because what they do is they build their own algorithm against cops so that based on the disciplinary matrix that they can have aggravating factors. And the goal is, if they have aggravating factors, to lead to your termination. So I think they're sitting on it. I think, again, I don't think they're concerned with statute of limitations, which is normally 18 months for a CCRB. I think they would easily exceed the statute of limitations because of the crime exception would be if proven in court that you committed reckless endangerment, the CCRB could charge you with that. And even if they lose it, again, you'll face civil liability because it's substantiated. I think this is extremely problematic. And I don't want this to be a ha-ha moment to most of the cops that, you know, are in opposition to what we're saying, and especially community response team that gave us an extreme amount of opposition in regards to vehicle pursuits. But we are comfortable to say that this was never a tactic when the police department was doing the most amount of intrusive police work on the broken windows theory in comparison to now. It's not a tactic, especially in some places it may be, but policing is not a one-size-fits-all. And in a metropolis like New York City, just based on the information that we know, that in a dense area that's not somewhere you want to be involved in a vehicle pursuit, you're in New York City, the most dense city in the entire country. It's a tactic that should be ultimately avoided, and if taken, has to be extreme circumstances, because this is what you're facing here. Is it worth it to lose your financial freedom because you put yourself, and I get it, like I said, your heart's in the right place. You want to get the bad guy. We get it. Believe me, we want to get the bad guys too. But right now, how could you? No one's supporting you. Sure as hell, not Sean Shell. But, shifting gears, this is a great picture. This is a great meme. I'm sure they're pretty pissed off. John, go into it.
Yeah, so I put a meme up on the screen. Come for the ride, stay for the gladiator matches. The subway is safe. You're just perceptioning wrong. A message from NYPD Transit, New York Party Department, Republic of New York. And it's two gladiators fighting on a train car. And it's in relation to the messaging that we're hearing, not only from the NYPD Chief of Transit, not only from NYPD Chief of Patrol John Schell, but also of Cass Daughtry. The police commissioner doesn't speak on subway crime, obviously. Chief of Department's in the wind. I believe he's still studying. We're not really sure where he is. They pop their heads up at parties and ceremonies and stuff like that, but we really don't see them much when it comes time to talk. All the talking has been being done by John Schell and Michael Kemper. Every now and then, their boss, Cass Daughtry, wants to throw his face in the mix, and he'll jump on the news and fail miserably, and they'll come in to save him. So what we're being told now, and I won't even give credit, I'll just give the facts. Subway crime is down tremendously now. Almost, I believe it was 48% for the week since they now not only have the National Guard in subways, they also are now committing 1,000 extra cops a day to NYPD Transit to go out in the subways. These are officers that are in administrative roles, which they call administrative roles, but a lot of them are in very important functions in the NYPD that they're there for a reason. Their job isn't for no reason. So they're committing 1,000 officers a day, every day, to New York City subways. And crime fell dramatically, almost 48% for that week. Eric, what do you think about just those facts alone? What do you have to say about that?
You know what? To the layman person out there that doesn't understand police work, it sounds great. Crime's 48% down for the week. And it's great that they're able to put all these resources, but what do we know? This is absolutely not sustainable. This is a phase. This is a trend. It's for a short period of time to cause shock and awe. But putting 1,000 police officers each day that are in various important important position in the police department, which I assume is probably some of these people come from the detective squad. So this is not sustainable. For one, I'm sure cops are being paid overtime. So the taxpayers, the taxpayer is paying for this. Also, it's a domino effect. So we're putting all these resources into the subway, and now cases are going to be affected by it, and other important factions of the police department are being affected by it. So this is absolutely not sustainable. We need an actual plan going forward that could be sustainable and be projected for the entire year. Not something that's going to last a week or two. This is going to phase out rather quickly. I would say that this is, if they're able to do this for a month or two, that would be a lot. But this is definitely not sustainable because the other factions of the police department are going to pay for it. We won't close our cases. And absolutely that. There's vital roles out there that are being displaced to assist in the subway. So it gives the mirage that the subways are safer, but are they really safer? I mean, when you have an army out there, is that really safe? Because if that army is peeled back, we're back up to 48% of crime. So that's not sustainable. It's not natural. It's completely artificial. It's on the surface, and it's definitely will not last. And I'm sure, John, you probably agree. What are your thoughts on that?
No, it was beautifully put. I mean, I really don't even have anything to add to it because I think you nailed it on the head. It's like, you know, you're at school, you go to a new school and you're getting picked on by all the kids in the school, and you show up with your big brother and hit all his friends one day after school. And then guess what? You didn't get picked on that day. But what's going to happen the next week? You're on your own. You're there. How do you stop the bully and all his friends from beating you up? You learn how to fight and you learn how to stand on your own. And that's basically what the NYPD is doing. Is I'm coming down here with my big brother and all his friends, but they're going to leave you out there high and dry. And then these numbers won't last at all. And still, I find it very, very concerning that crime's down 48% for the week. It's down almost, I believe it was down almost 12% for the 28-day period, but for the year it was still up 9%. That shows how much crime's actually going on in New York City. And not to harp on transit too much, but there was a recent interview. Please check our social media. Our social media will be out in the links in the bottom wherever you watch or listen to this. And there's a meme I can't play because we will get copyright issue for the music that goes along with it, but. It's basically a video of Taz Daughtry and Michael Kemper. They're on the Rosanna Scotto show on Fox 5, and they're talking about transit crime. And Rosanna just gets completely fed up. And she's like, you know, Taz Daughtry's like trying to just sell her on any statistic. Hey, do you know that day was the most ridership we've had in 2 years? When she's talking about crime, and she's like, wait, are we just going to keep saying this every day? Are you just going to keep saying the same thing every day as crime goes up, as New Yorkers are concerned, as shootings are going on? And he doesn't know what to say. And then his driver, Mike Kemper, comes in, his second driver, because I think Shell's his first driver. So his other driver, Kemper, jumps right in there to save the day. And I think he fails miserably, too.
Well, first of all, they were both outmatched in that interview. And I think Rosanna Scotto, with zero police experience, she just unveiled the curtain at that point. She was completely fed up to the point where it's like, all right, I've heard this song and dance before. What's the real solution here? And she put them on the spot. You know, credit to her. I mean, that was pretty impressive that she put them on the spot. And you know what? They are supposed to be the experts. And they had absolutely no solution. What do? They always default back to defending the police department for the actions that they're doing. No one's saying that they're not doing a good job for the stuff that they are doing. But they also default back to the fact that, well, there are thousands of other people that are getting to work safely. We know that. We know there's millions of people getting to work. They're getting home safely. And there's many, and majority of the police department is doing a good job. But there's still a major problem. And we're not trying to attack and identify the problem and use solutions. We're just defending the police department. It sounds completely immature. And they're failing miserably. They're failing miserably because they can't lie anymore. Not only has John and myself held the weak upper management accountable because we have the understanding of the inner linings of the police department. But now the media itself with zero police experience is fed up because it's just happening time and time again. And they're tired of being sold this lie that perception is not real. their perception is absolutely real. What's going on in the subways is insane. What's going on to the police department? The cops are being assaulted on a regular basis. This is the phenomenon. If the cops can't protect themselves, how can they protect you? But what's also obvious here is that we have to point out Cass Daughtry is the police commissioner of the police department. Ed Cabin is nowhere to be found on any interview. Mike Kemper is there as kind of like the closer to help these guys out when they're failing miserably. John Schell, once in a while, he takes that role. Jeffrey Madry's busy studying, so he's out of loop. He's just continued to make money. That's the only reason he's there. But Cass Daughtry is the police commissioner. But we have to ask ourselves why, because he's failing miserably. Failing miserably, and the New Yorkers right now should be fed up and say that they want the weak upper management of the police department to go. They need strong leadership that can actually do the job and keep them safe. This is a major, major epic fail. This is a great topic to go into. John, I'll let you start.
Yeah, so I just put up on the screen a post from the New York Civil Liberties Union, and basically all the progressive left in New York City Council are now sharing this graphic, and it says, I'm a New York City Council member ready to disband the NYPD's violent strategic response group. Now, myself and Eric were the only people last summer when this whole disband the strategic response group initiative started. We were the only people in law enforcement to actually stand up. New York City Council had a meeting, public safety meeting, that was directly the topic of that meeting was to disband the strategic response group. And no one showed up except for myself and Eric. We attended virtually. I spoke at it. And then we wrote an article in the Manhattan about it. We co-authored an article in the Manhattan about it. And we broke down in that article and on our social media, we broke down each segment of the New York City Council meeting. And in that meeting, the main witness I would want to say is the Civilian Complaint Review Board. So they had John Darsh, who's the executive director of the Civilian Complaint Review Board. And they had, they had Arva Rice, the acting chair of the Civilian Complaint Review Board, testifying. And when they testified, prior to them testifying, you hear New York City Council and they consistently saying rogue, unaccountable, violent when they're talking about the NYPD's SRG. But when they testify, they actually paint a completely different picture of the SRG, and it actually shows the exact opposite. The evidence proves exactly opposite of what the New York City Council was saying, and we'll get into that.
Absolutely. So the evidence actually presented by the Civilian Complaint Review Board themselves completely debunked their actual theory that the SRG was violent. And what they actually identified was that the Strategic Response Group was the most identifiable uniforms during a protest or a riot. And they actually received the least amount of complaints, and they were the most identifiable. So just completely debunked their evidence that they proved. Just shows the complete disdain on the police department. And ultimately, what we believe is the goal is to remove the strategic response group in collaboration from the CCRB and the city council so that these First Amendment protests and riots can move freely. And ultimately, we just see the emasculation of the police department and also obstacles made so that the police department cannot address these riots properly. We see it with the protest settlement, and we also see it with testimony from city council in collaboration with the Civilian Complaint Review Board. Absolutely, they have zero evidence to show that the SRG is the most violent group. If anything, what it did prove is that the SRG was the most effective at a riot or a protest, the most prepared, and the most transparent. And I think that's the most important thing to highlight with it.
Yeah, and like myself and Eric, we both raised the argument that if they're able to disband the strategic response group without offering one shred of evidence other than saying that they're violent, they're rogue, and they're unaccountable, then they could basically disband the entirety of the NYPD, because the data proves that the NYPD operates much worse than the strategic response group does. So the strategic response group, for those of you that don't know, was it was implemented in, I believe, in 2015 under then Deputy Commissioner, I'm sorry, Police Commissioner Bill Bratton. So he brings them in, and what they do is they are basically there for to combat any terrorism, to respond to any acts of terrorism, to respond to any periods of civil unrest, a pre-planned high-profile events, as well as they backfill in the precincts. If there's spikes in crime, they're there. They'll do mass deployment. So, I mean, but what we've been seeing them most recently and what you see on the news most recently is them at these protests, at these periods of civil unrest, and they are the ones that will move in to make the arrests. So CCRB had argued that their biggest problem was not being able to identify officers in large-scale mass arrest situations. But when it comes to the strategic response group, they didn't have that problem. So, like Eric said, the strategic response group was only responsible since their inception of 2015 for 1% of CCRBs. But they had a substantiation rate 10% higher. But again, they're the ones that are moving in to make these arrests during violent periods of civil unrest, and they're the most identifiable. So obviously, they would have a higher substantiation rate. So basically, they proved nothing, and Arva Rice actually testified that they are more well-equipped, better trained, and more easily identifiable than the rest of the NYPD. So if they're able to disband the SRG just using buzzwords, they're able to pull down the entirety of the police department doing the same exact thing.
Well, that's another problem. So here we have a group of people, the CCRB and the city council, with zero police experience and zero police perspective, that actually have the ability to disband a necessary unit of the police department. Well, whether it's the strategic response group or prior to that was task force, to me, it's the same horse, just different color. They operate pretty much the same. But yes, it's vital. It's vital that we have a strategic response group in the New York City Police Department. And they're pretty much like a utility group, and they fill a lot of holes and different roles that are necessary for the police department. But especially right now, as we have such anarchy going on in the city, they take an active role with the police department of being the front line of these protests and riots. And again, if anyone has an opportunity, you have to read the article that John and I presented. I think it's a fantastic article. We really presented the evidence to show that the Civilian Complaint Review Board and the City Council debunked their own theory, and actually their evidence actually proved that the strategic response group was the most effective, most prepared, and the most transparent. And it reflects on exactly that. If you're the most identifiable and you're at the front line and you're present at every protest and riot, well, then, yes, you will get the most substantiated amount of complaints, but the amount of complaints they actually were disseminated to the SRG was actually pretty nominal. I think it's quite impressive. So that's why we have to question, what is the ultimate goal here? The ultimate goal is to strip away the SRG, again, to allow these First Amendment protest riots to control the city. That's what this is about. Emasculate the police department and let these protests control the city. We see it with this, and we see it with the protest settlement, which creates an extreme amount of obstacles for the police department to make arrests. But what do we see? This is something I like to turn to. What do we see? We see the police department pandering to the CCRB and the city council. Why? Because they're hands off when it comes to First Amendment movement. But when it comes to Scott Lobato, when he's protesting pizzas in New York City, the police department swoops in and arrests him right away. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, again, you're going to see a complete two-tier justice system, completely different response. This was taken by Viral News New York City. This is off of his Twitter. You're going to see Scott Lobato. He has pizza party number two, where he's going to feed the pigeons. The leftover pizza and bagels would be feed the homeless. And basically, he's protesting the fact that coal-fired and wood burning ovens have to reduce their carbon emissions by 75%. Now, in order to do that, they're going to have to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on these new, whatever, ventilators, as you would want to call them. But the amount of businesses that actually operate with these in New York City, it's laughable. I mean, I think it's like in like maybe the 50 range, like 50 businesses, maybe even possibly less. I think when you go to pizzerias, it's probably about like 12. I think there are some bagel places that use wood burning, as well as matzo places that use wood or coal fired. So it's completely laughable what they're doing. They pass this in the middle of the night. So Scala Beto is an activist artist. I recommend you guys follow him if you don't. I also recommend you guys following Viral News New York City. Post a lot of up-to-date news that's going on in New York City. And what you're going to see is Scott is literally taking pieces of pizza. And he's going to throw them over the fence. But the police department is just waiting for him to do it so they could swoop in. And when you look at that compared to the night prior, specifically last night when the mayor held an event right outside of City Hall, and Within Our Lifetime, which is a pro-Palestinian group, shut down the streets of New York City, blocked traffic, blocked pedestrian traffic, harassed passerbyers, harassed people that were attending New York City mayor's party, got in their faces, scared them, put hands on people. The police department's completely hands off, and they're not making arrests. So I'm going to play the video, and then, Eric, let's get your thoughts on it. Here's the video. This is Scott walking over. There's one pizza. There's two slices of pizza. The police are moving in.
You're absolutely being arrested for littering. This mayor is corrupt. This is a fine. This is not an arrestable offense. This is not an arrestable offense, and you guys should be ashamed of yourselves for following his orders.
Feed the pigeons. Getting arrested for feeding the fucking pigeons. How you like that? Yep. Feeding fucking pigeons. We're getting arrested for this. Illegals are coming in and murdering. They're murdering people. We're getting arrested for arson around here.
So what do you think about that, Eric?
So first thing I would say, that's very smart on Scott Lobato and his cohorts on their behalf. It's very smart for them to get their message out. They were confident that they would be arrested immediately, and they proved the hypocrisy of the standard that's going on in New York City under Mayor Eric Adams. They showed that the Conservative Party will be dealt with much differently from the New York City Police Department than woke progressives at these pro-Palestinian riots, a.k.a. BLM, a.k.a. post-George Floyd. Anything you want to say that's pretty much on the left side gets addressed differently. So I thought it was very smart on their behalf. I think they were pretty confident that they would be arrested right away. That's what I find I have a problem with. I get so perturbed that the police department is so tolerant of anarchy in New York City, shutting streets down, really making life impossible for New Yorkers, and they stand down. I mean, if that was Relly Rel, who's one of the biggest rebel rousers at these pro-Palestinian BLM riots, and he did the same thing, would the police department swooping and moving as fast as they did? I think not. How do we know? The best prediction of what's going on is what we see in the past. What we see in the past is the police department would hands off. I also find it kind of funny that, you know, they talk about littering. Is it really littering? I mean, he's throwing pizzas, and it's not garbage, not paper. It's pizzas. The pigeons and other animals, they're going to come and eat it. It's going to be gone. So it's laughable, but on Scott Lobato's behalf, I think he's extremely smart. I think it really highlights everything, and it helps him get his message out. So for that, I think it was a fantastic move on his behalf.
No, absolutely. It's completely ridiculous. And for what? You know, new New York City pension numbers are out. This is a tweet from Reza Chowdhury. I don't know if any of you guys follow him. He's at Reza C1. I love Reza. He is like an analyst. He literally breaks down numbers. That's what he does. That's what his tweets are about, whether he analyzes crime, whether he analyzes finances. Great, great analytical tweets. So since assuming office in 2022, Democratic Socialist since 1987 and New York City Comptroller Brad Landa has lost $12 billion in pension assets. The equity portion of the pension is down 10.4%. In contrast, the S&P 500 has increased 4.04% in the same time frame. According to him and only him, his ESG agenda focuses on creating long-term shareholder value while seemingly prioritizing short-term losses. However, since pensions are constitutionally guaranteed in the great state of New York, his consistent underperformance creates a present liability for all residents New York statewide. Eric, what do you think about that? Because that scares the living crap out of me.
Oh, same here. First of all, it's amazing that he still has his job. I mean, anywhere else in the country, if you underperformed in this manner and you lost so much money, you would not have that same position. This is absolutely scary that it's happening. And you know, we said, right, it's you know, that these pensions are pretty much guaranteed, but are they really? I mean, because if you look at an actual pension, it's actually kind of like a Ponzi scheme if you actually break down what a pension is. So I to me, it scares the living daylights out of me. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I don't believe the pensions are guaranteed cents on the dollar, you know, and that's basically what happened in Detroit when Detroit fell. They were guaranteed cents on the dollar. They had a fourth of their pension. My father was a Teamster. He was only a Teamster for about 10 years, and then he moved on. So he did get a small pension from them, but some of his friends had did 30, 40 years as a Teamster. And what the Teamsters did is that was a corrupt union, corrupt organization. Their pensions were guaranteed too. But what happened? They cut their pension down in half. And then later on, as they were getting even worse, they cut their pension down in half again. So they received a fourth of what they were promised in retirement. Really hurt people in their elderly age when they needed the money the most, when they could no longer earn and make money. And so one thing he would always tell me is don't rely on that pension. And as Reza points out, because he is not a civil servant, as most of us who listen to this podcast are, he's not a civil servant. He's worried about what's my liability. Why do I have to pay for these pensions? I'm not getting a pension, right? And what do you think? Because what do you think is going to happen when they open up the state constitution again if New Yorkers are liable for our pensions? Do you really believe that they're going to vote to keep our pensions? No, they're going to vote it right out, especially with this city council. So there really needs to start being strong vocal pieces, not just from us, Eric. It's got to be from the unions, and it's got to be from the people who are out there on the boots on the ground. We've been led to believe to keep your mouth shut and don't talk politics and don't talk religion and don't talk about the things that bother you. But they were going to feed us all to the slaughter if people don't wake up and start doing it.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I always thought to myself that, you know, growing up, you know, even my father would tell me, and I'm sure the same thing with you, growing up in Brooklyn and Staten Island, it was always an extreme amount of pride to be a blue-collar worker. Everybody always said, get a good pension. Excuse me. So we know, we just knew, like, the ultimate goal was to get a great pension. You figured you'd be set for life, right? But what do we see now is what's going on with these pensions. It's scary if these pensions will still be there. So I kind of, like, weigh out the arguments that, you know, should you have a pension? Yes. But that's why I tell people I would put more of my stock into the 457s or the 401ks, because at least in a 457 or 401k upon retirement, you have more control over that money and you can move it over into different sources, and you could also pass it on to, God forbid something happens to you, a wife or a child, whereas the pension, that pension dies with you. And especially right now, the way things are going, that pension may die before you die. So we are headed for some scary times. So that's why I recommend to people, when you're on your way out and you retire, if you do have a lump sum amount of cash that you can take, I would not leave it in your pension because you're getting a higher pension per month. I would take that money, at least you have control over it, and then put it to some other source. And I would also evaluate right now if I would put more stock into your pension or some other source, because we are headed for disaster. Great. Here's another great video. I can't wait to talk about this one. John, just jump right into it. This goes right into my forte, discipline matrix.
Yeah, so this is, I'm telling you, I'm going to clip out. I have hours and hours of work to do tomorrow and the next day because I'm going to clip out almost the entirety of this hearing. This is the fiscal year 2025 preliminary budget hearing, the Committee on Public Safety. What happened today, like I said, it's 9 o'clock at night, and I believe it's still going on now. New York City Police Department got the part of the day, but this just happens to be the only, as soon as I clip in, they're like, they announced Tiffany Caban's up. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to record this because I know this is going to be good. So she's not even there. I guess she's working from home today. She's probably still working from home due to COVID, you know. And so she's not even at the council hearing. She plugs in virtually. And you see sitting on the dais in the front, I mean, the entirety of, they brought the army with them, the entirety of the police department. They even have the Deputy Commissioner of Equity and Inclusion sitting there. I don't know what she's doing. But you see John Schell, he looks withered, man. This position, and I hope it's not the memes because they're only jokes. You should, the complaint that we made against you, you should be worried about, but you're not because IAB is corrupt and the police commissioner is corrupt, and we made the complaint against him too, and that's not going anywhere. So we're going to play this video right now of Tiffany Caban, and I'm just going to play it. We'll talk about it. Eric, you'll go first.
Okay, so, and I just want to make sure that I'm understanding your answer correctly. If there is a mistake that takes place in the community that is against the law, and if that's all it was a mistake, there wouldn't be any sort of disciplinary action or arrest being made. But if there is an quote unquote honest mistake within the department that it is set aside and it's not subjected to the rules, the disciplinary systems that are in place, which, by the way, the presumptive penalty for a false statement is termination. So it's good to clarify that's the double standard. I want to move
council on to member.
Questions about how many. I want to move on to questions.
No, hold on a second. Wait a second. Hold on. You, council member, you made a series of statements. I think pretty much all of them we believe are incorrect and inaccurate and very unfair, actually. And just so we're very clear, this was a mistake. Mistakes happen. We apologize. This has nothing to do, literally nothing to do with the NYPD disciplinary system, how we police. I just want to be very clear about this.
All statements are subject to the disciplinary
council member, this is completely inaccurate and completely unfair.
Wow. You know what? It's amazing how everything comes full circle. So John and I, since the inception of this podcast, over a year now, we've been talking about the disciplinary matrix. We even did a podcast about the disciplinary matrix. I've been screaming, kicking, talk about the danger of the disciplinary matrix, and most of the cops have really not paid attention to it. And I'm sure John Schell was not worried about the disciplinary matrix because none of the weak upper echelon has fought against the disciplinary matrix, but now he's at the center of it. Why? Because I said, and I foreshadowed this, and John, you know I said this a long time ago, CCRB and the city council would utilize the disciplinary matrix as the weapon to terminate cops. That would be the sword to cut down the cops. And she says it right here. She's using it right against John Schell. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't think it applies. I don't agree with most of the stuff with John Schell. I think he's completely inadequate, inept. I think he's a fake tough guy. I don't like his stance on most things. But he doesn't deserve to be told that he can be terminated for making a mistake. I don't agree with that either. But, of course, right away she goes right to the disciplinary matrix that the same weak upper management never put their feet down to fight. And what is the presumptive penalty? Termination.
Yeah, so, I mean, so she's a lawyer. Let's just get that straight. Tiffany Caban is a lawyer. She worked for the DA's office for about 3 months. She calls herself a prosecutor. I wouldn't put her in that category. But she's a far left socialist. I don't know what she's prosecuting because she doesn't believe in crime, jail, or penalty.
3 months.
Yeah, unless you're a white conservative male who lives on Staten Island with a bald head, or you have white hair, blonde hair, blue eyes, and you serve in the South Bronx. Other than that, you're not going to go. Your jail's not in the cards for you if she's prosecuting you. But so Tiffany Caban, far left member of the New York City Council, she's talking about a tweet that John Schell had put out. Now, we were saying how dumb we think that it is, that they really should, if you need help on social media, you should reach out to us. We do consulting. We'll keep the memes out of it, because you're failing miserably. So what John Schell had did is he was pushing back at, he attempted to push back at a perpetrator who was released, a violent perpetrator, repeat offender who was released by a judge. And what he did is he tweeted the judge's name. And then the chief of department retweeted it because Castle Archery is in charge of that account. And then the chief of transit had retweeted it because he works for Kaz Daughtry. And then Kaz Daughtry had retweeted it because he said, good job, guys. Thank you for doing what I told you to do. Because that's probably why John Schell tweeted about it, because I'm sure that he didn't come up with that idea on his own. But he tweeted the judge's name. However, it was not the judge's name. So he felt like a moron because numerous articles came out that he tweeted the wrong judge's name. So he corrects it. He stands up somewhat like a big boy, but he stands up like a chief big boy. Even though I had confirmed with several of my units, I'll take the ownership because I ultimately tweeted it. So he puts the blame. It wasn't really me. I was given wrong information, right? But I'll own it because I put it out. So he somewhat owned up to it. And so now Tiffany Caban saying that he should be terminated and prosecuted because that's the presumptive penalty in the disciplinary matrix, which she's right is the presumptive penalty, but it's during an official department trial or hearing. Although he is under oath at this hearing, he wasn't under oath while he's tweeting from his Twitter account. But this is how ridiculous. And by the way, presumptive means this is the penalty if there's no aggravating factor or if there's no mitigating factor. The basic penalty for a false statement is termination. Also, Kaz Daughtry was pleaded guilty to a false statement prior to him making an assistant commissioner, the one made up title of assistant commissioner.
You know what's funny? I don't know if you caught yourself earlier, but when you spoke about Bratton, you called him the deputy commissioner. We're so used to calling Kaz a deputy commissioner, but he's actually the police commissioner of the police department. So yeah, you know, it's funny, like Tweedledoo, Tweedledum. These guys are all a bunch of idiots. One tweets it, and they all tweet it and jump on each other because they're all competing with each other and they're all showing off to each other that they're promoting each other's Twitter pages. They're all a bunch of cucks. I mean, it's really embarrassing that these guys can't think for themselves and they all made the same mistake. And again, just shows that John Schell needs to stay off social media. Listen, it is a mistake, but it's a big mistake because you're smearing someone's name. So, and again, he should take full responsibility. You can't say, well, this was given to me. And, you know, because, yeah, everything's given to you. You're the chief. You don't even have to get your own coffee. So you can't even go by that. You're the leader. You're in charge. You're the one that put your stamp on it. So it is a big mistake. But even with that being said, I think it's completely idiotic. For Tiffany Caban to try to weaponize the disciplinary matrix to him is ironic and laughable. Because I've been screaming about this the entire time. It's like, well, listen, buddy, I told you. Isn't it funny? Nobody cares until it affects them. Should he be terminated? But just shows how serious this disciplinary matrix is because she referred to it right away. And they could easily weaponize that disciplinary matrix. So I hope now, John Schell, when you watch this, because I know you do, that you actually get together with your boss, the actual police commissioner, Kaz Daughtry, and examine the disciplinary matrix. And it needs to be disbanded, honestly. But if it can't, because it's a political move, it needs a good overhaul. You need to really examine this. Because during Keychan Sewell, they tried to examine it and change some things, but nothing was changed. If anything, they made it worse. So you really need to examine this because you could be affected by the presumptive penalty. And as John said, the presumptive penalty means the automatic penalty. Aggravating is something that can make it even worse. Mitigating is what we've been talking about. That if, you know, I'm sure John Schell would be saved by mitigating factors, which means you're part of nepotism. But who knows? He's a token pale white face. So we could see something completely different.
I don't know, but it looked like he clenched up to me. It looked like he clenched up, bro. It looked like it was like that. Woo. And it looked like he went right for the lawyer. Like, You know, it looked like he got a little nervous when she started, when she brought that up. You know, I think he needed clarification. I think even the police commissioner, the figurehead police commissioner at Caban, I think he needed clarification because he definitely doesn't understand that. He never read any of it. I'll guarantee it, that.
They must have been like, what's the disciplinary matrix? What is that? What is that?
What's the presumptive penalty? What is that? You know, I'd love to hear. I actually want. I would love to hear him go over the use of force to continue him and then to stop. I would love to just hear him say all those things. You know,
but before you go into it, I just want to say that John Schell and Kaz Dorf, since you watch this, we do have an episode where we explain the disciplinary matrix, so you guys can look it up. It's on YouTube. Anytime you can take a look, I'm sure it would be educational, informative to you.
Yeah, and then we did another one when Ki-Chan Sewell supposedly revamped the disciplinary matrix, and then we debunked that and we showed how she actually made it worse. but the common knowledge in the police department is no, the disciplinary matrix was revamped. It's like, no, you never read the first thing, and then you didn't even read what she wrote after. It just got worse. It got progressively worse. So maybe you guys should want to revisit it. Ed, if you'll listen to this, Caban, you should probably do it because you have nothing to fall back on as your time as the police commissioner. Like Eric had said in a prior podcast, you're the most insignificant police commissioner in NYPD history. You should look at that disciplinary matrix, start to remove some of it because it's absolutely ridiculous. I'm not saying false statement, but obviously you could be guilty of a false statement. And look, you could get bumped up 6-7 ranks to a deputy commissioner from a sergeant driver. You could go from sergeant operator all the way up to deputy commissioner operations and actually be the real police commissioner after you give a false statement. So maybe pull that one out too. I don't know. But let's bring this full circle though, I think, Eric, because we're talking about indemnification. We're talking about cops not being indemnified for doing their job. Now, it's come to everybody's attention that Eric Adams, the mayor of New York City, has a sexual assault allegation against him, brought on by the Adult Survivors Act, an act that he cheered on. They said it was a tremendous day for the state and victims, and every victim has a right to have their voice heard. Now, again, this Adult Survivors Act was for Jean E. Carroll. They put this into place so that she could go after the 45th president of the United States, Donald Trump, civilly. So Eric Adams cheered that on. I actually put that tweet out the other day of his when he did that. And I was not for it. Eric was not for it. We thought it was a targeted attack. We believe in statute of limitations for a reason, because how can you really prove or disprove this case from 1989 now? So he gets a sexual assault allegation from a coworker. Eric, what are your thoughts initially hearing about the sexual assault allegation against him?
As much as the opposition that I have for Mayor Eric Adams, which I believe he's by far the worst mayor the New York City has ever had. We are far off worse than we ever were before. I still think that this is just complete insanity. I think that it's impossible to prove or disprove this case. I think that statute of limitations are so important. How do we retrieve any potential evidence to actually have a proper investigation? I do believe that he deserves to be treated fairly in this, especially for the fact that everyone deserves due process. Even Mayor Eric Adams. But this case is from 1993. So this is 31 years old. How do we retrieve any potential evidence? And the only potential witnesses are this potential victim and Mayor Eric Adams himself. We don't have any recordings or anything to reflect on the actual incident. No evidence, no potential evidence. Where does this go? So, but what it does lead into the fact, in which I'm completely perturbed, is that I was affected by not being indemnified by the police department. I was involved in a stop, question, frisk incident where I suspected someone was in possession of a firearm. I made that stop. Ultimately, the person did not have a firearm. With that, I received a substantiated civilian complaint. And as a result, I faced civil liability where I had to pay money out of my own pocket. I was not indemnified. And that was for on-duty active police work in the scope of my employment. And here Mayor Eric Adams is getting indemnified for something that has nothing to do with actual police work. Whether the allegation is frivolous or not, if it's legit, that's not the scenario. Well, that doesn't apply. The fact is that this doesn't have anything to do with police work, and I don't see any reason or any plausible reason for indemnification.
No, yeah, I agree 1,000%. I mean, I'm clearly not a fan of New York City Mayor Eric Adams, but this is an allegation that could happen to anybody. You know, like it could happen to anybody. So I want people to have fair due process. But how could you? This, and again, this came back to slap him in the face. Shows how little he thinks. Shows how little he didn't. Oh, I'm going to go after my enemies. And I'm going to use this thing that's completely frivolous, not realizing that it could come back around and get him. So here it is. It's coming around to get him. And, you know, I put out something and I said that on duty booty doesn't fall under the scope of a police officer's duties. So I believe he was a sergeant at the time and he was the head of the Guardians Association at the time. He was a pretty powerful figure in New York City at that time under David Dinkins. He was a close friend of the criminal Al Sharpton, the race baiter Al Sharpton, the fake reverend Al Sharpton. So he was pretty powerful in the city. He had a lot of political pull. So the woman's claims are that she was a civilian employee of the NYPD, that she met with Eric Adams to get promoted, and he wanted her to do perform oral sex on him in his car. He took her in his car. They pulled over somewhere. So I have to change what I originally said, because although on-duty booty is not in the scope of a police officer's duties, off-duty booty is definitely not in the scope of a police officer's duties. So he's off duty at the time. They're in his personal car. He claims he never met the woman. So why would the people of the city of New York have to foot the bill for his legal representation and possibly a settlement too? Why would the people in New York have to do this? If that's the case, then the federal government should have represented Donald Trump and paid his settlement. And obviously, nobody did that.
That's a great point. But here we see more hypocrisy and just the standards don't apply to this administration. What applies to Mayor Eric Adams doesn't apply to everyone else, only what's in their favor. Another hypocrisy that we see that we could talk about, we talked about time again, and we're going to keep talking about it because it's complete hypocrisy. Sal Greco was wrongfully terminated for his association to Roger Stone. Mayor Eric Adams had association with Mike Tyson and other figures, and he became a captain of the New York City Police Department. So, again, we just see more hypocrisy when it comes to Eric Adams. If it's good for Eric, it's okay. But if it's in opposition to Eric's ideology and Eric's progressive politics, well, then, you know, you swim on your own, and you swim with the fishes. And that's what happened to Sal Greco. It's just completely wrong. Every cop right now that is facing civil liability because you were not indemnified, you should be up in arms. Where are the unions in this? That's what I want to know. Where are the unions? The unions are just useless and baseless when it comes to any potential argument and fight in the city. Pat Hendry, completely useless. He should be screaming in arms right now. Many police officers have faced civil liability. And for on-duty scope of employment stuff, on-duty, and I've said it before, we said on a podcast, the only time you should not be indemnified for something that you do on duty, it should be an extreme case. But yet, Mayor Eric Adams was off duty, or at least the allegation was that he's off duty. And this was 30 years ago, and he's being indemnified. So what would happen? Let's talk about this, John. What would happen then if he was not the mayor at this time and he got this allegation? What would happen?
He would not be indemnified at all. And as a matter of fact, he wasn't even acting as a member of the New York City Police Department, because she clearly states in her complaint that she was going to him because of he was the head of the Guardians at the time. So if he wanted legal representation, he should have went to the Guardians, and the Guardians should tell him where to go. It has nothing to do with us. What do you want us to do? You know, it has nothing to do with New York City at all. I mean, look at poor Juan Perez, police officer Juan Perez. He responds to a 911 call of an emotionally disturbed person. While he's on that call, he goes to tell his partner something, looks away, and the emotionally disturbed person attacks him from behind, puts him in a headlock, and a fight ensues. And because of that fight, New York City is not representing him. New York City is not indemnifying him. He had to, the PBA finally stepped up after we did a podcast about it, and they stepped up, and now they're helping represent some of the legal bills, not all of them, but at least it's better than nothing. But New York City's not indemnifying him. If the whatever settlement arises, and I don't believe there will be a settlement because the allegation's so frivolous and the lawsuit's so frivolous, but he's responsible on his own. He had to leave his career early, retire. He doesn't have an ID card. He doesn't have a gun. You know, he doesn't have a good guy letter because he had to retire under investigation because it was likely that he would be fired. When the city's not indemnifying you, they already found you guilty of wrongdoing. I mean, and here we are, New York City Mayor Eric Adams, something that happened off duty in 1993 with so quick. I'm going to play the video right now where you're going to hear the head of Corporation Counsel say that they're indemnifying him. And just so everybody's aware, Sal Greco actually filed a Freedom of Information Act request requesting for the Corporation's Counsel a legal analysis of why they are representing New York City Mayor Eric Adams. This is the second time he's filed this. The first time they said that there was no letter written so far, but this is the second time. And I believe taxpayers deserve this. And I believe every New York City police officer deserves this, especially the ones who fought cases that were not indemnified.
How are you doing?
Good, good. How are you?
Good, good. So I wanted to just address this a little bit. When you, excuse me, when you start reading details in that lawsuit, very, very specific. I know you said you didn't talk to her, you never met her. How do you explain how specific those details are?
He is not going to be answering specifics of a complaint. He's represented by counsel, and the Corporation Counsel's office is representing him. We are currently reviewing the complaint, and we would make the appropriate answer, and everyone would get that information when we file it with the court.
Thank you, Judge.
Specificities from the bird's eye view.
I think the judge responded to that, and I've been very clear from the day this came out. It did not happen. I don't recall meeting the person, and that is not who I am as a person. That I am specific about.
Hi, Mr. Mayor.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Question for you.
Well, this highlights exactly what I was talking about. The reason why I was referencing to that, if he was not Mayor Eric Adams, he would not be indemnified. This wouldn't even be a question right now. It would just be an article in the paper, and he would be seeking his own attorney. We would learn that the information and the name of his attorney. That just shows the level of corruption that's going on in this administration, the level of how they're drunk with power and they're using the weight of this administration for their benefit. There is absolutely no reason. I'm very curious to hear the justification on why he's being indemnified. I mean, this has nothing to do with his employment, has nothing to do with arrest or something that has to do with law enforcement. It's a sexual allegation. Again, I think it shouldn't even happen because of statute of limitations, but he himself, here's the irony to it, was an advocate for the Adult Survivors Act, so now he's become victim to it himself. I think it's complete hypocrisy, but it just shows the level of tyrannical position that this administration is, and he believes he's some kind of king, and I think he's throwing around his power, and we're seeing it. It's blatant, but yet no one's really challenging it on him. If this was Mayor Bill de Blasio, we would see a completely different reaction from the media. But again, I think the media is completely soft when it comes to Eric Adams and very hands off. And ultimately, they don't give him the same treatment, the same criticism that we should expect for accountability and balance.
Absolutely. I mean, later on in this hearing, a reporter asks him, why is the Corporation Counsel indemnifying you? You know, I think they're waking up. They're seeing, all the tweets that myself, Sal, yourself are putting out about how this is hypocritical. It's hypocritical. It doesn't make sense that he's being represented by the people in New York City. Doesn't make sense that if there's a settlement that they're going to pay, that New York City taxpayers are going to pay for this. So it makes zero sense. So a reporter asks him, and he basically shrugs it off, doesn't even answer the question, and there's no follow-up, and no other reporter asks, but it's... It just shows like the arrogance on him. But I will tell you, I watched that press conference. I watched that whole thing. I said a few weeks ago, Ed Caban looks like he saw a ghost. Jeffrey Madry looks like he saw a ghost. Eric Adams in that press conference looks like he saw a ghost. He does not look like the same happy-go-lucky guy that you saw just a few months back. He could do anything he wants, and he's the king of the world. I don't see that in him. I see a lot of nerves. He looks like he's under a lot of pressure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I've said it before. Listen, the bottom line is we cannot prove or disprove this case. But what do we know is everyone that's in Adam's circle has been played with some checkered past. He's been a part of numerous negative annotations. Yet we have not heard, you know, I said this on Sal Greco's show, you know, and I really believe this. You know, it's like you hear about the person that's driving down the wrong way in a one-way street. You ever hear that person? He calls his wife up, honey, listen, you know, there's a thousand people going the wrong way on a one-way street, you know? So that's kind of like what it is. If there's a thousand people going the wrong way on a one-way street, well, who's the asshole? So we never heard, you know, we never heard in 1993 that Eric Adams saved some kid. We never heard that maybe in 2000 he did something astronomical. We only hear things that are negative in surrounding him, the people that are in his circle. So eventually, I do believe that something's going to stick. So I do believe the pressure is mounting. The walls are caving in and they're crumbling. Something's going to stick. We never hear anything good, anything positive. And you can see his face it just in this video. It's completely white and pale. I think that this is coming to an end.
Oh, absolutely, man. And you know, I think you know, I don't know, man. To me, there's too much of a cloud of corruption surrounding him. There's just too many things going on. I think he should step down for the betterment of New York. I mean, I think Cuomo resigned for less. I think he stepped down for less. I think there was a lot more pressure put on Andrew Cuomo to leave. Then there was a lot less scandal surrounding Andrew Cuomo than there is Eric Adams. I mean, he is how many legal defense funds does he have up now that he's looking for money for? How many people does he have writing letters for him to try to prove his character? I mean, and when you look back, you look at any of this stuff. This was a lieutenant. I forget his name. He worked in the I forget what command it was, but he was accused of sexually assaulting one of his underlings. He was a lieutenant, I believe, in the 8-8. I could be wrong. And he was seeking threesomes with a civilian employee. He wasn't indemnified. He was an active on-duty lieutenant accused of the same exact thing. There was a captain, too, that was accused of the same thing. He was not indemnified. Why is Eric Adams indemnified? And I'll make the contention. It's only because he's the mayor. There's no other reason. And even just because he's the mayor, it doesn't make it right. It's actually wrong. And he is a corrupt individual. This is
John, it's absolutely wrong, because what you're saying here is absolutely true, because he's the mayor. So he's not supposed to have the people serve him. He's supposed to serve the people. But as the mayor, he believes he's the king. So he's having the people serve him. And those people that are on that dais, which includes the Corporation Council, are serving him and serving his needs by whatever it takes, by not applying any standard that is fair and equitable to anyone. It's only what's good for the benefit of Eric Adams. Eric is all about Eric. That's what we know. We can see it. It's completely obvious. There are thousands and countless amount of cases we could probably go through and comb through of different cops and different ranks and file that have been persecuted by lawsuits, frivolous or not, and they've had to go into their own pockets so they were not indemnified. But yet Mayor Eric Adams is indemnified for a case that's off duty, a sexual allegation that's 31 years ago, that if he was not the mayor, we would not even be hearing about this case, how the city is going to flip the bill on this. So just complete hypocrisy. Again, shows the level of corruption on this administration. And I think that what you pointed out is fantastic, that Cuomo left for far less than what's going on for Mayor Eric Adams. So why does he continue to stay under this amount of pressure? That's a good question. It just shows the level of character that he has and how drunk with power this administration is. I mean, Look at that dais right now. Do they look confident to you?
So this is a tweet right now. I just looked at this tweet right now from Adrienne Adams. She's the speaker of New York City Council. So she's the speaker for the council. And she's basically saying that she was questioning the leadership on their vetting process for how they put out information online. So I didn't hear this yet. So I don't know what's said or not said, but I think it's going to be good. Let's play it and talk about it. Eric, I'll get your thoughts right after.
Who's responsible for vetting the information that comes across? Because a lot of the information is incorrect.
Assistant Commissioner Carlos Nieves.
Confirm that you will tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in your testimony, and to answer honestly to council member questions.
I do.
You may go ahead. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Speaker. Good morning. So the department has over 250 social media, separate social media accounts. In the department, our executives, precinct commanders, are given access to social media accounts in order to inform the public in the area that they cover. Our higher level executives also have social media accounts, and they are entrusted to deliver the department's message.
Okay, my question still was, who's responsible for vetting the information that comes across? Because there has been significant incorrect information that is potentially harmful, actually, to people out there doing their jobs appropriately and well.
Yes.
So, Madam Speaker, you are correct that we have to get the information right. I think we're all very aware of this. To the extent we have gotten things wrong, we have apologized for that and acknowledged it. And I think I can say, going forward, we are going to be extremely careful to make sure that we're getting our facts right, that things are being double checked. We completely appreciate that when we're putting things out there, we have to make sure the information is accurate. We do not disagree on that.
Okay. Wow.
First of all I have to say is, you know what? I completely despise most of the people that are part of the New York City Council. But Madam Speaker, outstanding job. Checkmate. Because they did not even answer the question. They did not. They were boxed in. The bottom line is they don't have a vetting process. The bottom line is there is absolutely no significant leadership on this job. That's why, in comparison, when we talk about Ray Kelly, what were things tight under Ray Kelly? Did he run a tight ship? Yes, but it was necessary. He knew that he had to be the top of that pyramid to maintain proper control. But right now we see it's all over the place. Sometimes it's Kaz Daughtry. Sometimes it's John Schell. Sometimes it's Madry when he's not studying. Sometimes it's Philip Banks. Sometimes it's Chief Kemper. So we have too many chiefs and not enough people falling in line doing their job. This just shows the complete lack of leadership that's going on in the police department. She exposed it with that one question. I think it's embarrassing. Complete epic fail. They look lost up there. Look, Kaz Daughtry, you're the police commissioner. We know it. You couldn't even step in and correct this because there is no vetting process. And again, Madam Speaker, if you have a chance, just talk about the misinformation that they use to attack this podcast when you get a chance. That'd be great. I appreciate it.
So first they push Sergeant Nieves, who was just promoted to deputy commissioner of I don't even know, because we have a deputy commissioner of public information. So I don't know why he's a deputy commissioner of public information too. So we have two of them. So they push Nieves up, right? He can't answer the question. He says they have 250 social media accounts in the department. That is ridiculous. So there's not one message to push the message of the department. So there's 250 different messages of the same department. They're all over the place. Like one message is, well, hello there. I bet you thought I was playing Call of Duty, but I'm not sitting in a gamer chair You know, no one's vetting this. This is why we see Kaz Daughtry with a PlayStation controller on his desk, why he makes follow-up videos to debunk it. And then when they can't answer it, they push back at the attorney. The attorney's actually pretty good, though. I mean, I think the attorney's the most competent person on that dais. I mean, in the two videos that we've seen, he's the only one that gives, like, clear, relevant answers. So, again, I'm just going to tell you this one more time. We do social media consulting. I really think that you should do that, but we're going to give you some free advice. It should be one account. That's it. One account, not 250, maybe five accounts. Maybe if you want to put the top, definitely not 250. You guys don't know what the hell you're doing.
I think it was a great question. I think that she really boxed him in, and she knew with that question they wouldn't be able to answer it. I mean, it's laughable, the fact that he can say there's over 250 accounts. That's insane. It's insane. That's why it just shows there's no leadership in the New York City Police. But this is outrageous. And there's really, let's be honest, if there are 250 Twitter accounts, it's impossible to bet that. It's impossible to make sure that John Schell cross-referenced his tweet with some other tweet with some guy who's in the 6'7 or 6'9. That's impossible that they're getting the message out there. Isn't that what he said? To get the message. Or what they're really getting at is different messages. This is, honestly, this is an opportunity, and I hope that attorney tells them, like, you guys need to get your act together and get rid of all these accounts, and it should be one account. And if Kaz Daughtry, if you are the police commissioner, it should be your account only. I mean, unless Ed Caban wants to go off to Qatar and learn about social media, maybe he can get some education somewhere. This needs to stop now. This department is bleeding right now, and someone needs to stop the bleeding. Because it sure isn't Mayor Eric Adams, and it sure isn't any of these buffoons.
As soon as we get off this podcast, I'm quoting that tweet, and I'm going to let John Schell and Kaz Daughtry know that we offer social media consulting if they need help. Because this is ridiculous, and we need to follow it up with a bunch of memes. Because this, they look like a bunch of buffoons up there. And it looks exactly what we've been saying. Inept, clumsy, lacking skill. That's exactly what they all look like. I mean, it is, Kaz Daughtry's face is priceless. Ed Caban is like, oh, no one knows what to say. I mean, and this is almost the entirety of the meeting. And that's why I said, I'm going to go back and I'm going to clip out almost everything, because I don't believe they deserve to get attacked and abused the way they do, the New York City Police Department. But this administration in particular, I don't feel bad for a second. Not for one second. Honestly, the only person that I see that's competent is that attorney and LePetri. LePetri, when you talk about if someone does their job, knows their job in and out, it's Mike LePetri. Is Kaz Daughtry a hard worker? Yeah, but like I said, he's like the traffic kid who you put in plain clothes one day and he's running around. He doesn't know what to do, but he wants to go play the police. That's exactly what I see when I see Kaz Daughtry. And now, instead of ganking the traffic guy that's yelling at old women for doing 5 miles over the speed limit or for texting their daughter at a red light because they're going to pick up their grandkids, instead of doing that, they made him the real police commissioner.
I don't feel bad for them. Honestly, they do it to themselves. If they were properly prepared and they actually had a fluid, confident, competent management, leadership, upper echelon of the New York City Police Department, they would not be in this position. Then if questions were fired at them, they would fire it back with confidence. Because competence breeds confidence, but they don't have it. It's completely inadequate. It's completely inept. There's no communication amongst each other. I think they're all battling for who's in charge. It's really a scramble right now amongst John Schell and Kaz Daughtry and Kemper. And it's horrible what we see right now. I think they do it to themselves. There's absolutely no vision. Who is in charge? Clearly it's not Ed Caban. No, they could not answer that question. That's why she asked that question. I think it's a great question because it really shows that the police department is all over the place. There's no vision. And she probably, I'm sure she was probably prepared if we went further into this, and I'm sure she probably has different messages of tweets showing that there's a different message. It sounds to me like she did her homework already.
Oh, absolutely. I think I'm going to send this on Mikaz Daughtry's tweets so she could see exactly what happened. And maybe the John Schell tweet, too. He calls me a BMS warrior. I could tell you none of those were vetted. None of those were vetted, definitely. None of John Schell's tweets were vetted because he's the king. You know, he's the king, except for when Kaz is around. Then he reverts back to the driver. So, I mean, that was an amazing tweet. That was a great find. I'm not a fan of Adrian Adams whatsoever, but that's one of her best tweets ever. That's hysterical. Yeah, I mean, so again, the hypocrisy of New York City. On-duty police officer, you go do it to a 911 call, you chase a vehicle, pursue a vehicle, and the CCRB, the overzealous CCRB, finds you guilty with very little evidence of nothing, or even just finds you guilty with zero evidence, which they have done numerous times with a lot of people, including Eric Dim over here. You will not be indemnified by New York City. But if you're the mayor of New York City, you will get indemnified for an incident unrelated to you, even when you were off duty. And I actually put something out today and I had people say, well, when you're a cop, you're never off duty. I'm like, yeah, let me know how that works out for you, guy. Let me know how that works out for you when you're in retirement and an allegation pops up on you. Tell them, well, you were never off duty, so you're responsible to indemnify me. Go run to your union, see what they tell you, guy. See what they do. So I just think it's New York City. It's crumbling. And we're just seeing it's a crumbling city, and it's systemically corrupt at this point. New York City Mayor Eric Adams was a better police officer than he is a New York City mayor. And that's not saying much at all, because he was probably one of the worst cops to make a 20-year career.
Well, I think this is great to reflect on this, because for the cops out there that watch this podcast, just think to yourself, you can be involved in a vehicle pursuit if you haven't. Again, refer to this podcast, read that letter put out by the LBA president, where he basically lays it out for you. If you get a substantiated complaint from the Civilian Complaint Review Board and you're involved in a vehicle pursuit, you will face civil liability. You will not be indemnified. That person will not be prosecuted, and you will pay out of your pocket. But Mayor Eric Adams was accused of a sexual allegation 31 years ago, off duty. Off duty, not trying to save anybody, not trying to stop a gunman. And he's indemnified, but you will be paying out of your own pocket. So if you want to still put your neck out for this administration, well, if you do, then you're on your own, because this is just complete insanity. As far as that goes, I think that's enough of that. I'd like to shift gears. I think we should talk right now. There was an incident, just to show the dire straits that New York City is in right now, how politics has penetrated the police department, the entire administration. There is a woman that was arrested for trying to remove squatters from her home. I think this is the most insane incident that we've ever seen recently. And it just shows why there's a great escape going on in New York right now. Why people are fleeing New York for better pastures. This is a great example of it. Has anybody has seen this or is aware of it? If not, you need to see this. It's alarming. It's scary. It's completely just disgusting. John, let's go into it and get your thoughts.
Yeah, I can't pull the video up. I don't know if I even shared it, but I watched it a few times, definitely. So it was a video. I forget the news channel. It goes and follow this woman. Woman's parents die, leave her the house. When she goes to the house, there's a squatter in there. So she tells them to get the hell out of the house. They leave. She comes back. She gets the locks changed. She calls the cops. Cops come, say, okay. Next thing you know, this guy comes, barges in the door. Calls the cops. Cops come back and they lock up the woman who has a deed. They take, and for me, what it appears that the man, the squatter, shows them a receipt for a bill of work that he had done in the house. He doesn't show them a lease. He says he has a lease, but he never shows the lease. So he's a squatter, right? Like, he's showing them a receipt for work he had done in the house. How do you know his friend didn't make that? You can put that on anything. How do you know he didn't make it 5 minutes prior to coming there? So he has a receipt for work that he supposedly had done in the house 2 days ago. Not that he was in there for 30 days, none of that garbage. And honestly, even if he was, and I was the cop and I could tell that he's squatting, I don't care. I'm going to put the burden of proof on him to prove that he was there for 30 days. And I'm going to give the homeowner back the house, because That is absolutely ridiculous. What I saw in the video is I saw a sergeant get bullied and he locked up a victim because the police department is emasculated, has people in leadership that shouldn't be there. It has people wearing uniforms and doing a job they shouldn't do. So we send an emasculated police department there. The sergeant comes there, shows how little he understands the law, how little he cares about people, and how much he's worried about getting in trouble more than he's worried about being a cop. And he arrests the victim and protects the criminal.
Hands down, everything you said, I was just going to say that was well said. Absolutely. Emasculated police department does not really know the law. But what it does show is that the police department is penetrated by progressive politics. We talk about how they have this criminal first society. And that's exactly what it is. The cops are more scared about protecting the rights of the criminal than protecting the rights of the actual victims. And we see it clear as day, and it shows right in this case. The cop is more concerned about getting rhetoric from this administration, city council, CCRB, from the criminal than actually the victim. And it's just it's disgusting. It's really despicable. If anybody sees this, if there's not a better reason to leave New York City, I don't know. This could be anyone. This could be anyone. You go on, especially with the how unsafe New York City is right now, and it's just completely lawless and out of control. You go on vacation and come back, and there's people occupying your home. You could be in the same predicament. It's absolutely scary.
What else? Yeah, no, I agree 1,000%. I mean, I think when I watch that, I'm like, I'm embarrassed for everybody on that scene. I'm embarrassed for the New York City Police Department. That woman, they should have went back there after seeing this video. The police commissioner should have went and rectified this. Throw that guy out of the house. Apologize to that woman. This woman should sue for false arrest, and she should win because this is absolutely ridiculous. You don't even have evidence, and you don't even have evidence that this guy lives here or anything, and you just take it. So it's and thank God that the news crew is there to document all this. I mean, so that she will be able to use this in court later on. But before we go, real quick, just a PBA put out a survey for cops, very similar to the 2016 survey that they put out. Myself, Eric, were not cops for years, so we didn't see that survey either. I did see the survey, but we weren't police officers to take it. So I saw the new survey, and it's basically, you know, it's the results are going to come back horrific, like as they did in 2016, that all the cops are miserable, that they don't feel safe, that they don't feel secure, that they're worried about this and that and that. But there's a big telltale in that survey. This 2016 survey, they named, what are your thoughts on the police commissioner? In this survey, Pat Hendry takes that out. They ask about the city council in 2016 survey. Pat Hendry's survey doesn't ask about that. They ask about the mayor, Bill de Blasio, in 2016. They don't ask about Mayor Eric Adams in this. Very, very telltale. Pat Hendry is a water boy for Eric Adams, just like the sergeant, whatever his name is. His name's not even worth mentioning. Whatever the sergeant, the SBA guy, the guy that probably was doing the same thing that Mullins was doing, probably ratted on him. That's the only reason he's there. And so they didn't name the names. And the same thing with Lou. They're not going to name the names. They're never going to name the names. The CEA has been in the wind. That kid started out Monahan. He started out all hot and heavy first couple of weeks. He was running ads. He was doing news appearances. Vaccine mandate comes. Haven't seen the guy since.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It just shows how Pat Hendry and everyone else under this administration is just scared. They're terrified of this administration, and yet no one's standing up on moral principle. They just pander to it. This is a great opportunity for Pat Hendry to ask those questions and really delve into it and fight back, but he's not going to do that. Again, I agree with your statement that he's a water boy to Eric Adams. This guy has zero balls. He's got, and we've seen it. Listen, he refused to go on Bill O'Reilly show, right? They couldn't get him on Bill O'Reilly's show.
Screw Bill O'Reilly. He has to come on here.
He's supposed to come on this podcast. I mean, we wrote him a beautiful email. It couldn't have been more professional to open up some dialogue. He never even responded to us. So I can just see the kind of character he has. You know, even with that, the PVA has a female police officer put out some monologue talking about the police department and why people are leaving for better pastures. And even that speech obviously prompted by the PBA, did not match what's really going on. They're talking about pay. People in the past did not leave the New York City Police Department because of pay. That's at the bottom of the list. There's far other contributing factors of why people have left, starting with the vaccine mandate, starting with the emasculation of police department, starting with political hit jobs. These are many other factors. That's at the bottom of the list. But again, the PBA is pandering. They're being the water boy, as you said. I totally agree with that statement. But with that being said, I think we covered an array of topics here. I thank everyone for watching New York's Finest Retired Unfiltered Podcast, our 265 Police Live Series. There's more content coming your way. We're going to stay up to date with what's going on with the NYPD, progressive politics, politics in the country, and an array of topics. If anyone wants to come on this podcast, you think you have something interesting, please contact us on the website, www.thefinestunfiltered.com. And even if you're on opposition, opposition meets opportunity. We'd love to have you. It's a pleasure. John, any last words?
No, that's it. These unions are so focused on contracts. They're not focused on your worker rights, on your safety, on your quality of life, on your quality of work life, on your home life. And the contracts they fail miserably at. Like I said, these guys couldn't negotiate a car lease. I wouldn't want them to negotiate anything for me. Like, so you got to really start waking up to what's going on here. They're talking about pay. That commercial is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, I'll tell you right now, the majority of cops that left, and we've had some guys on that left for other departments. I actually spoke with an officer today who's going to come on here. I believe he's working in Texas now. He left. All these guys are leaving for worse benefits, less of a pension, and less pay. So I don't know what they're talking about with money. Like, money's not – these guys are making more money than any cop, I believe, in history has made in relation to how much a cop makes to the cost of living. Like, I don't know what they're talking about. I really don't, you know. Like, the quality of life, people are leaving the New York City Police Department. Money's, like, number 10. Because, again, that contract had nothing to do with it. You're going to see the people that are coming back. I'm going to put those clips out, and we'll probably talk about it on the next one. The people that are coming back, they're not going to be effective cops. They're coming back to pay their pension. They're going to do a solid year at whatever thing, and then they're going to be gone, maybe a year and a half. And they probably got some cushy gig because whatever. Maybe they donated to Eric Adams' campaign, or they went and kissed a ring with Caban or Kinsella, or probably not Kaz. But, I mean, they're going to come back. They're going to feel the wrath of Kaz. So let's see how long they last. You know. So with that being said, thank you guys for listening. Protect your financial future. If you need any financial help, contact our friends at Lee Bulabu.
Law enforcement professionals dedicate their lives to serving and protecting our community. But who's protecting their financial futures? That's where Laidlaw Blue comes in. Our wealth management platform is specifically designed for the law enforcement community. Laidlaw Blue is a division within Laidlaw Wealth Management, run by retired New York City detective John McDermott. His status as a retired detective uniquely positions him to establish a deep connection between Laidlaw Blue and the law enforcement community. Our platform is easy to use and provides a range of financial services, including investment management, retirement planning, and insurance solutions. With Laidlaw Blue, you can secure your financial future and provide for your loved ones. Our team of experienced financial advisors understands the unique challenges and opportunities that law enforcement professionals face. We're here to help you navigate the complexities of financial planning and achieve your goals. Laidlaw Blue, secure your financial future today. Book a meeting using the QR code displayed or call us directly on 888-901-BLUE. That's 888-901-BLUE.